Charlie Gunn, Rhea 6. So, if you didn't go for any Nippon Go club.
I did attend. Not sure I didn't attend. I did attend, you know, but I never really attempted to be serious about it. I was never really serious about it. Never cared to.
Could they do anything about those people who were half-heartedly learning Nippon Go?
Well, I suppose what could they do? Unless they treated us like little children who gave us some whacking around, but I suppose they couldn't go that far. I suppose those who are keen enough and pass certain exams, there were incentives for them. But there again, the incentives were never good enough for me. So I was prepared to let go of the incentive.
No form of punishment?
Not that I know of. Not that.
So what did you do for the rest of your time? Apart from working, what did you do at your leisure time?
Well, those days rather limited, huh? There's places to go, only cinemas, and cinemas films again, either very old films or the propaganda films. So, nothing much to choose from. So I didn't go much to the cinemas. And then other places like those days there were the Happy World, you know, the Happy World and the New World. And those places, again, those places were mainly meant for those people who would want to gamble. What was popularly known as telo telo, you know, their own game, the local game, you know. There again, even now, I'm not particularly fond of gambling. And, you know, by the time I arrived home from work, those days we had to cycle to and fro. We used to do a lot of cycling and again, there's no incentive for me to after arriving home from work, hot and bothered, could never be bothered to go out again. So there's nothing much to do by way of spending the leisure hours in the form of pastimes. Nothing much to do, really. Except to go to some of my cousins who are living nearby and just yarn with them, spend the evening with them, or yeah, that's all.
So when you went to see your cousins, what kind of topics did you talk about? Were you allowed to talk about what?
Oh, yes, among ourselves, yes. I mean, we, you know, in the lowest tone as possible, we used to talk of the good old days and how we yarn, or we discuss the progress that the Allies had made thus far. You know, what we had heard over. from the radio.
You had a radio at home?
Well, yes, I think I had a small one. I had a small one. Small one up in the attic, you know. But I then put on every night. Could be traced. I'm not very sure, but I think it could be traced if you put on every night. Especially when to transmit, yes. When you transmit, yes. But I think receiving, not to. But anyway, you're very nervous about it.
Did you listen to the radio alone, or you always had a group of friends?
Not really a big group, you know. We always try to, you know, two or three of us. And, you know. Besides a small thing like that, you can't have a big group anyway. It's a small thing.
So
yeah, about three-quarter size of this cassette. About three-quarter of that. Size about three-quarter of that, and that's all. Small one, and those days, you know, not like the present day. You know. Not that clear, you know, can be very frustrating at times. Very frustrating. Yeah. Could hardly hear on a bad day. Oh, could just give up. You
know. Your friend came to your house?
It's normally, man. Sometimes I go to his house, or sometimes he comes over. We sort of change places, just to...
Change places?
Yes, just, you know, I don't know whether it's wise or not, or it's just, you know, just to feel that, just a feeling of safety, that's all. That's all.
Were your parents worry about that? Listening
they
to
didn't even, I
radio?
Think they didn't even know. They didn't even know. They didn't even know.
What kind of news could you get from the radio, and to what extent did it affect you?
You used to get All India Radio, you know? All India Radio, news from all India. Difficult sometimes to get. London sometimes a bit difficult. Sometimes very clear, but sometimes it can be very, very, very difficult. But most of the time, all India, sometimes London. Get from London. Don't know whether we ever tried from Hawaii or not. Not that far. I think most of the time from All India Radio or London, BBC.
So, after listening to the news, to what extent did these news affect you?
If such big news as the victory at the this naval battle, like the American battle of this naval battle of
Midway
and all the we feel very elated, and later on the bombing started to even bomb Japan. That was, we sense the beginning of the end already. We sense the beginning of the end. Oh yes, I mean this new sort of, to some great extent, sustain us, you know, sustain us, our hope, you know? Build up our hope and just sustain us from going from day to day, you know, keep us going, keep us at least, keep us to be cheerful and Otherwise, nothing else to look forward to. Otherwise, what's there to look forward to?
Did you help to spread the news around?
No. We were very careful about that. No. Especially we. I'm one of those. No. And we try to keep among ourselves. One or two others, if they wanted to spread, we won't know. But we make them to. I mean, among ourselves, we promise that, you know, we keep the news to ourselves. That's very dangerous. Very dangerous.
Among who?
Two or three of us.
Friends or cousins?
Huh?
Friends or cousins?
One cousin and one or two friends, or three of us. Not two, very few of us. Very, very few of us.
And in the case of your family, during the Japanese occupation, how did your family manage to meet this day-to-day problems?
Well, as I said, times were hard in the sense that, you know, we could never, even from rentals, we could only get the same rentals as before. There's no such thing as black market rental. You know, there's no black market rent. We couldn't say to that fellow, "Now look, everything in black market, my house rent too must be at black market rate. It must be at the same old rate." Yeah. So we were forced, I suppose, in the case of my mother, we were forced to, well, let's be very frank, forced to sell quite a good bit of our properties here and there, you know, some like in my mother's trinkets little bits of unwanted furniture or something like that. No? Just all those could be sold at black market, of course. And little by little, it kept on. Because my salary, salary was hardly enough for myself even. And of course, my brother-in-law and my late brother-in-law was doing a bit of buying and selling of black market things. You know, I suppose he could make some money, but still not enough. So we had to some extent to sell some of our things. To get our, to buy our, this we talk of daily necessities, you know. That's how we survived.
And your father, did your father's?
My father never worked. He never knew how to work.
Or started a business?
I suppose he was never used to do anything. I suppose he was born with a silver spoon or golden spoon, whatever you call it. So he never really worked, or even he never did any business in his life.
Did your father have to sell land or houses?
Initially when he had to contribute to this donation to the Japanese, he had to I think he had to mortgage some of his properties. Where to get the cash, so much cash suddenly. Now when they came in, money was good, you know, dollar for dollar, don't forget that. Now at the end, you can pay them in Japanese note. What they wanted was solid cash. Yeah, I think he had to pay 50,000 or something like that. And suddenly, where to get $50,000? So he had to, I think, mortgage or sell some of the property to raise it. Otherwise, he threatened to
cut his head.
Yeah, that's what they say. But then you see the old people, you know, the old people naturally when they heard that. They were forced to.
So on the whole, your family could manage the food problem, clothing problem, medicines problem.
Yes. Managed. Not so badly off. At least we had, you know, some things around the house to sell when we had not enough cash to sell.
Were you still living at Upper Serangoon Road?
Yeah. Upper Serangoon, 170 Upper Serangoon Road. 170 Upper Serangoon Road. Now, there's a housing, I think there's a condominium now, and in front you find there's a petrol station there. Next is Charlton Road. You will go as far as up to Charlton Road. Just before coming to Charlton Road, there's a petrol station. That would the exact frontage of our house.
Your family house.
Family house. That was the exact frontage. That petrol station. Our property was bounded by, Upper Serangoon Road, Charlton Road, and behind Surin Avenue. Quite a fairly big piece of land.
So, did you continue to work in the electrical department until the Japanese surrender?
Yeah, until the Japanese surrendered.
Can you remember that day when the news broke out?
I went round town on bicycle. Everybody was going there, jumping and dancing and. In Chinatown especially, and by God, the suddenly from nowhere they brought out, up to now today I don't know where they brought out those things, you know, those good things, you know, those very fresh cigarettes. They must have got from the British troops, and from the troops. You know. I don't know from where they got, from nowhere they everywhere, the whole world. Yeah. People were very happy then, yes. Even children were dancing on the roadside, yes.
Anything's happened in your department? Electrical department?
No, did I work till the end? I'm not now. Did I work till the end or not? Or did I work at another place? Oh dear, this happened so long ago. Well, I don't think I worked elsewhere.
No,
I don't think I work elsewhere. And you know, the thing just ended just like that. The Japanese just sort of withdrew themselves to the. They never. I think that they never turned up. Eventually, they just withdrew themselves to their own quarters. Huh? They never turned up at their workplaces. You know? They surrendered. They quietly. They kept themselves to in their own quarters. They never came out again until the British came over. The Allied troops came and they surrendered to the Allied troops. There were Japanese troops along the street. Yes, there were the Japanese troops. Yes, there were Japanese soldiers. Yes, but the Japanese civilians suddenly disappeared.
Were you officially told not to report to electrical department?
I can't really remember whether we were told or not, or whether just, you know, things happened that time, you know, things just happened, and I suppose we were too happy to care for what happened at that time, you know, to note what happened in detail, whether we are told to I suppose we are told that the war was over, and nobody telling us not to report. I think nobody told us not to report, but I think we were told that the war was over, that's all. It's up to us whether to carry on or not, you know. That was a time of uncertainty. They didn't know what was going to happen next themselves. At the same time, the office had to carry on with the office work. So whoever wanted to work, carry on with work, they carry on. Because now, mind you, that office, they were the old staff. What I meant was this. What I mean is those fellows who had already been with them from before, the original staff. You know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose they carried on, because they were members of the staff. Whereas in my case, I was the additional staff. Brought in during the Japanese occupation. But they were the original staff also, original members of the staff, so these people carried on.
Since pre-war.
They carried on. And until now, until their time to retire. Otherwise, you know, the service will be terminated.
And when the British came back, it was a period called the British Military Administration.
BMA.
Yeah.
BMA.
What did you do under the BMA? What did you do for a living?
BMA, I did nothing, I think. No. BMA, again, I was out of work. I didn't go back to this department. I didn't go back. Because I was... I was hoping to get my London matriculation. Hoping to go to London to carry on with to further my studies. So I carried on with my London matriculation studies on my own. Then, yeah. So I didn't do anything.
So on the whole, the Japanese occupation, did it have any form of did it affect your life, your study, your personalities, or your family in whatever way?
Probably, because I don't know. Because before the war, outbreak of the war in this part of the world, already before the war with the Japanese then, in 1942, I was working, you know. I was just started work with the Ford Motor Company. And perhaps if it had not been for this war, I would have continued my work with them, because although I was a clerk, I was doing something quite important work with them, and I was at that time getting quite good salary. I mean, comparatively, I was getting good salary, and perhaps, you know, I would have continued with them, and I would have been working with the Ford Motor Company until I retired. But then, due to this war, then suddenly I didn't go back to work. Somehow, I don't know what made me not even to go back to Ford Motor Company. I decided to take up this study. Eventually, I got my London matriculation. I got married. Then again, suddenly I changed my mind about going to London. I took up teaching. So I became a teacher.
Until I retired
in 74. Of course, in between, I was a part-time soldier. Being a part-time soldier, I was mobilized for about almost 8 years in the army. SAF.
So when the British came back, did they ask all the street settlements volunteers to report
and sort of organize
them?
Yes, yes. Yes, the volunteer force was reorganized. I didn't rejoin at the beginning, because, you know, they still treated us as Asian officers, as Asian soldiers, paying us 50 cents a day. Our pay was 50 cents a day only, you know.
It's not a regular soldier.
The regular Asian 50 cents a day. Yeah. Of course, that's supposed to be minus our ration money. Our ration and all, we get free makan and all. But this is our pay. I don't know, 150 or something. No, 150 a day or something like that. Whereas the European private would get about three times more or something like that. So I was one of those who resented that attitude, you know, still after the war, after all the suffering under the Japanese, they still treated us like that. We refused to rejoin them. Not until 1950, I think. I rejoined 1950, I'm not really sure. 1950, I rejoined. Yeah. That's a break of 5 years in service.
Did the Japanese occupation affect your impression of the British?
Of the British?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
In what way?
You know, of course it did, because it disappointed us very much. Firstly, this disappointed us, because I was on active service. I was on active service, and I saw the British troops themselves. They're, you know, all the talk about, you know, the British troops, their bravery, and to see them, the way they face the enemies, the way they ran away from them. It was a real disappointment.
You mean you saw them ran away?
Sure, what? We were there, man. We were there. We were talking with these boys. And they were telling us, you stupid fools, you're going to fight for us? What are you fighting for? They told us, these British boys,